You're listening to In This League
on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Ace. Featuring Bogman.
Oh, the yummy silence. Oh, it tastes so good, you guys.
Oh, he's on tilt. He's full tilt.
And the Welsh.
Nice.
Bogman, let's not overreact.
Do a little dance.
Are you serious?
Make a little pick. Get down tonight.
Nice.
Too high score, is that bad?
Visit InThisLeague.com for full podcasts and more. Coming to your ears now.
What's up? It's the ITL boys in the house. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's In This League. It's Bogman. It's the Welsh. You can find me on Twitter at IsItTheWelsh. And find him on Twitter at Bogman Sports. What a shocker. Glad to be here. We got a whole bunch going on. Ron Chandler, the godfather, the guru, the big dog, you know, someone important who's been doing it, doing the fantasy baseball stuff longer probably
since
than
we
I've
were
been.
3 years old.
Maybe 3 months old. I mean, we're going to talk about it. Like, he might have been playing fantasy sports before I was born. And I'm not young. I'm in my 30s here, guys. That's how much experience Ron Chandler has. He's going to be joining us here, in about 10 minutes or so. So strap in here. In the second hour, Bogman and I, we're going to be doing multiple things. We're going to be answering your questions from the ITL ball bag. We're going to play a little game we call Guess Who? And we're going to be going over some of the more recent news and notes from fantasy baseball. There's a lot going on. People are injured. People are coming off the DL, but not quite. I mean, you and I talked about this on the ITL Fantasy Baseball podcast, which if people want the full throes of everything we do, go to InThisLeague.com. You can get all the mini podcasts that we do because we do a whole bunch of stuff. We've even got comedy stuff if you're interested in checking out the ITL Army, kind of an insider program for In This League. If you're a hardcore fantasy nut, which if you're listening to us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, I imagine you kind of are, that might be a place for you. So we were saying in the baseball podcast about how it's like a sacrifice thing.
Chicken arise, arise, chicken arise.
Arise, chicken. Arise.
Like to have one player come off the DL, another must go back on. And that's exactly what's happening here. The DL,
the
DL baseball gods must have their sacrifice. But there is so much going on that we want to cover. Full episode dedicated to baseball. You want football, we got you on the football podcast. So make sure you go check that out. With one of those oddities that's happening here, Bogman, we have covered a whole lot of Matt Harvey lately, from the big D that was hiding in one of the pictures.
It's company policy never to imply ownership in the event of a dildo. We have to use the indefinite article, a dildo, never your dildo.
To him crying to his teammates about Adriana Lima, to me kicking him out of the new Welsh order, which, again, if you're not a part of it, I've essentially started a wrestling group. It's the new Welsh order, the NWO. Maybe you heard of it.
New Welsh order.
And Matt Harvey was in it. You and I had a bet last week, and I took against Matt Harvey, and I won your money, and it's really great. Your money's fantastic, Bogman. Thank you. I bet on Matt Garza, which I've never done, who no one's ever done, and
yeah,
I won.
And I said this before, and I'll say it again. If Matt Harvey and Matt Garza are playing against each other again, I will bet on Matt Harvey again, even though I don't want to like ever bet on Matt Harvey again.
Why would you?
But it's Matt Garza.
Yeah. Well, it was I got 3-1 odds. So I had a nice little PayPal ding or Venmo ding that hit me after the Friday game last week. And it was nice and good. But with all of
Matt
Harvey,
anything else to talk about?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got something interesting. So Bogman and I, we're out here in Arizona. We're out here in Phoenix. We get, we're a lot of the spring training stuff. We get a lot of access to baseball. Well, one of the places that I work, I'm near Monday through Friday where a lot of the baseball players stay. And just so happens the New York Mets be in town. So when I kind of pull in, I see all the buses. And I always think of the Suns because all the basketball players stay here. And I was like, oh, yeah, the baseball players stay here. And I've seen some guys from time to time. Like I remember I've told this story before. Brian Wilson, like in 110 degree weather, instead of like, you know, just wearing like some basketball shorts and a shirt, he was full on Brian Wilson. You know, he had like the jeans, he had a beanie on, his shirt open so you could see his tattoo. That's very important for him.
Jackass.
I know.
God.
This is a couple years ago. So I'm like, who's in town? Oh, yeah, the Mets are in town. So
I bet he's serving like coffee at a Starbucks.
Brian Wilson?
That's the exact same look.
There's no, like, I think a guy that has a huge cross on his chest that has to wear open shirt so everyone can see his chest, I don't think he can be a barista. I don't think that works.
Yeah, you get the too many of the chest hairs in the Frappuccino. Yeah. So
the Mets are here. I kind of like dawdle around to kind of see what's going on. There's like the crazy like autograph people that are kind of waiting. And I just, you know, come around a couple times just outside, see the buses are just hanging out there. And all of a sudden, I'm standing out there. And there is a, how do I put this? There's a scantily dressed woman who...
A lady of the night, perhaps.
In the day, in the midday, who she doesn't fit. Even though the scene around here is very swanky, she stands out a little bit. And, you know, got the high boots, got the dress. My assumption was she was here to fix Matt Harvey's problems, if you know what I mean.
You're prostituting yourself over cheeseburgers again, aren't you?
Man's got to eat, Julian.
Matt Harvey's in town. This woman just appears.
Get a little poison out of the snake, the watch.
She's hanging out, and she's just standing in front of the hotel, and she's just waiting. And she just, like I said, she sticks out like a sore thumb. Then all of a sudden, this car pulls up. It's like a red, you know, like this red, like almost look like a those Ford Fusion or something like that, and pulls up right next to the girl. And the girl like puts her head in. She goes, "Oh no, no, no," something like that. And then he drives off. And then she goes to the more to the front of the hotel. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder.
Guys, if, like, are you working?
Well, I was wondering if this was maybe someone for the Mets that was going to pick her up, you know, drive around the corner.
Giggity, 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 goo. Stick around.
But then, as the guy pulls away, I'm not even joking you. There is the family stickers on the back of the car. You know, like the mom, the husband, and the two kids with the dog. Those are on the back. And this dude went to go pick up this lady of the night that allegedly was probably there for Matt Harvey, most likely, but not really.
Clearly, he's just a concerned citizen. And as a family man, he wouldn't want her to be walking around in the wrong neighborhood. People get the wrong idea, right?
Yeah. Well, and what is this guy trying to do? Matt Harvey has suffered enough blows here, guy. He lost. He's only a multi-million dollar pitcher. He lost Adriana Lima. Don't take this beautiful, you know, thigh-high booted woman away from allegedly Matt Harvey, who's probably
this beautiful
not.
Gift. I think if that guy, like, if you have those family stickers on the back of your car,
what are
and
you doing?
You get caught with a hooker, they should make you put like a hooker sticker on them, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. Like, it's like
it
mom,
be like family,
dad,
dog, you know, yep. Husband and wife, the family, the dog, and then, you know, just trashy hooker sticker.
And that right sticker there. Is like a chick that's like half falling over with a cigarette in her hand and a beer bottle that's falling. I think that's a great sticker. We should give that. And you know, he'll be like, oh, I'm an Uber driver. Me too.
Oh, yeah. Did you call an Uber?
Me too, buddy. Me too. So I don't think we're going to get
actually
Matt Harvey.
Not a bad idea, the Welsh. Now that you brought it up, and I'm thinking about it.
What? Oh,
you know, just sign up for Uber.
Okay.
And then when you're soliciting the chicks, you could be like, "Oh, did you call for an Uber?" You know, that way if you get caught, like, "No, I'm an Uber driver. I was working for Uber."
It's an all new app. I'm going to be very careful about doing this on air, but we'll call it Slobber. It'll be called Slobber. And, you know, there's some stuff that you could do with Slobber. It's a version. I'm molding that industry that she might be in with Uber drivers. We'll call it Slobber. And I think
it
works.
You could call
it Bobber. Bobber. Exactly. All right. We've gone down a rabbit hole here. As you're listening to this, I don't believe Matt Harvey is pitching in this series. Is that right? Well, no, Friday. I think actually Harvey is pitching tonight. So
yeah, it's Harvey and Corbin.
All right, that's a good matchup. So what I'm telling you is if you want to find out, tune into the ITL Fantasy Baseball podcast. I will be giving reports if I have seen this scantily clad woman multiple times. And if Matt Harvey lights it up against the Diamondbacks, you know she got to him and Matt Harvey's back on track.
One of the things I like doing most is banging.
Can you do me a favor? Can you interview the scantily clad woman if you see him again? If you see her again?
Yeah. I mean, I'll pitch her Slobber and see what she thinks about my new app. App. I could be very careful about what we're saying here.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe since you are a family man, I should be doing the pitching.
Yeah,
here.
Good job. Yeah, please. You do the pitching. Speaking of which, let's take the biggest 180 we've ever done in our lives off of that whole thing, because we have got on one of the gurus of fantasy baseball to join us, where we're going to actually talk some fantasy baseball kind of philosophy, talk about a bunch of the major players that are going on. Let's get his thoughts on it. The ITL guest line is a buzzin'. Ron Chandler time.
His next guest, you know, for
ITL.
And here we go.
All right, on the ITL guest line now, he is
The Godfather, and I don't really do a good like Godfather impression.
Like I don't do impressions, Bogman. I can't. Ooh, the Godfather.
I don't do animals now.
Yeah, but he is the Godfather, the guru, one of the originals of fantasy baseball. Someone we would all look up to. He is Ron Chandler. You can find him on Twitter at Ron Chandler, and of course at ronchandler.com. As a matter of fact, Bogman was able to grace everybody with his presence, but he was able to spend some time with Ron over at the First Pitch Conference out here in Phoenix and got to hear Ron talk and won one of the contests. So, Ron, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Bogman, can you relive us through the moment? Because I don't even remember because I wasn't there, but Bogman was. What was Ron talking about, and how good did it feel to win whatever that contest was, Bogman? Relive us through that.
That felt great because Ron was the very first speaker the first day, and you know how I am early in the morning. I'm like a zombie. So I got there, and Ron started talking, and he was handing out free subscriptions to ronchandler.com if you could answer his questions. And in a room full of baseball nerds, to answer one of those, you know, 7 or 8 questions that he had right, it felt pretty good. You know, I felt like a pretty accomplished nerd at that point.
So, Ron, how do you like First Pitch? How did you like spending, you know, time out with just, you know, the great people in the industry, the people that love fantasy baseball like you do? How was that experience at First Pitch?
Of everything I'm involved in with this industry, that is my absolute most favorite thing doing because it gets me into contact with the people that read my material. And I want to hear what people think and what they're doing and how they're playing the game. And it's just the absolute best time, especially out in Arizona where we get to spend a whole weekend watching AFL ball games and listening to some of the top speakers in the country rattle on about this and that. It's just a great experience. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, and Scott and I are lucky because we live out here in Arizona, so I get I get to go nuts with Arizona Fall League. I was at the Arizona Fall Stars game with the whole crew. Didn't get to make it to First Pitch, but yeah, we get that lovely experience. I have a quick question before we start into this. One of our ITL Army members, the group of people that follow in this league, you have an obvious, and this is like no surprise to you, you got a fan base. You know, people have followed you through the years, and that fan base has extended over into our fan base. So people were excited that you were coming on the show with us. And I know you've probably talked about this at length over time, but you know, there's plenty of people that haven't heard the story because this question was popped up to me. But what was the experience? Like, just walk me through, if you can, that first realm of getting into fantasy sports. On your Twitter profile, you list in 1986 was when you got into it. Like, what got you into fantasy baseball, besides obviously probably the love of baseball?
Well, it's an interesting story, actually. I was living up in New Hampshire at the time, and I was just rummaging through the discount rack in a B. Dalton's bookstore in Manchester, New Hampshire, and I came upon the Rotisserie League baseball book and the Bill James abstract at the same time. I had never seen – yeah, it was like so serendipitous. And I had never seen either of these books before. This was 1984, and just absolutely fell in love with the whole realm of advanced baseball metrics and fantasy baseball. And I started my first league in 85. It was actually – no, at the end of 84, it was actually a hockey league was my first fantasy league because we were living up in the, you know, hockey country in New Hampshire, and was a bunch of high school professors and buddies of mine and a whole bunch of people. And it was great fun. And then we started baseball the following spring, and that just kept going for a long time. So that's how I got into it. And after winning the league for a few years, I thought I was, you know, this was a real smart guy, so maybe I could start writing about it. And slowly but surely got myself a toehold in the industry. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you got it. I mean, who doesn't like having a nickname like the Godfather? Like the Godfather of fantasy. It's a pretty good thing.
All right, stick around because after this break, we've got questions with Ron Chandler. So don't go anywhere.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, we're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The Welsh, Bogman, and Ron Chandler. Let's get into this. Okay, so you've been doing some stuff for the ESPN Insiders, and people can find that. And I highly encourage everybody to go check out and support. We should everyone should always have that in their mind, that not only when we talk about these things, but make sure you're supporting us, supporting the people that come on, give them clicks, you know, retweets, all that type of stuff. So in one of the most recent ESPN Insider articles that you put up, you asked, should we have seen Eric Thames breakout coming, which I think is fascinating. So again, everyone go read it, but would you mind taking a couple moments to talk to us about this and the ideas that you bring up of owning your skills?
Well, sure. You know, coming into the season, we didn't know what to expect of this guy because he basically didn't show very much in the majors, his first experience in the majors. But then he became a monster in Korea. And the biggest challenge that we were having is trying to convert his Korean League stats to something that was reasonable at the major league level. And no matter what we did, the numbers were coming out too high because he just was a monster in Korea. And so everybody was wondering, well, will he revert back to where he was when he first played in the majors? And my attitude was like, no, probably not, because, first of all, he must have learned something in Korea. I mean, probably not at that level, but something. But here's a little tidbit that everybody was missing. In the minor leagues prior to being in the majors, back in 2010 in AA, he hit 27 home runs and he batted .288, drove in over 100 RBIs in AA baseball, which is huge. He had an OPS, I think, of like 890 or something like that. And once he got his first promotion, he really wasn't all that bad. He just hit a wall. He hit a wall, I think it was in 2012, and he couldn't adjust. And he spent the entire 2013 season in the minors and then ended up in Korea. But there was a skill there. There was something there that he had shown early in his career. And the point of the article was that once a player shows that skill, he may run into difficulty adjusting when the opposition adjusts, but that skill doesn't go away. That is always there, and given the right set of circumstances at the right time, he might tap back into it at some point. And I think that's what we're seeing now with Thames this year. I don't think he's going to keep up the pace he's at now, but he clearly has elevated skills from when he was first in the major leagues, and I think this is a player that you ride out for the rest of the year.
So, because I'm fascinated with this. I'm fascinated with the concept of the owning the skills. Bogman and I have kind of talked about this before. Neither one of us are huge projection guys. People like to ask that question. Yeah, neither one of us are big into that. But there's this balance. Because I got a couple questions, and I know Bogman has one that I want to kind of keep on this trajectory. But as you were saying, you know, we're seeing the skills of Eric Thames. I immediately go in my brain, because I had told Bogman about this. I was almost going to put this question together, where you see a guy like Eric Thames, you see Aaron Judge, you see Miguel Sano, all in incredibly different situations of showing their skills. But where do you personally find the balance of taking these guys that have never really performed at this level, that we've maybe seen glimpses in different places, or the glimpses right now? How do you take the guys that have come out of nowhere, like Thames, Sano, and Judge, and balance them against the guys that have always been producing? You know, how are you going to balance the guys with those ranks? And because I know you probably get questions where people are like, hey, would you trade Cespedes for Eric Thames? And so how do you balance the two worlds when you know these guys are going to come down a little bit?
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the underlying metrics. A guy like Sano, even though he's gotten off to a great start, the one key metric that I look at is that he has a 58% contact rate. And that is scary. That means this is a guy who's going to go through deep slumps and he's going to have his streaks, but is not a player you can count on consistently. And the odds are that he is going to hit a slump at some point this season. Whereas, you know, a player like Thames, who's gone through the trenches, he's paid his dues, he knows what it's like to have to keep these numbers up over the course of the season. I think the odds are, and the metrics back it up, he's got higher contact rates, he got higher hard contact rate. He is the type of player who probably can keep up this level of performance to some extent. So it's really a lot of experience. It's a lot of looking at some of the underlying metrics.
Okay,
so it's experience plus metrics, really. Yes. Is kind of the how you would break that out. That sounds logical.
So one more realm on this. Then I want to take it one other step. When we're talking about owning our skills, what about the minor leagues? Because we've got these really interesting scenarios where, take a guy like Ian Happ, who was just brought up. Tons of skills. I know you were out here. You probably saw him. I saw him multiple times out here in the Arizona Fall League. And he's multi-positions. He's got a good bat. There's tons of skills to be had. And he goes out and has a homer in the first game. So people are tweeting us, should I drop Ian Kinsler for Ian Happ? How are you balancing the young talent? Because more than ever, we also don't quite know if they're going to go down or not. Cody Bellinger, for all intents and purposes, was going down, but fate mm-hmm. worked out. Fate worked out, and also the team just you couldn't let him go. How do you balance, when we're talking of owning the skills, a guy like Ian Happ, and then when we look at these players like Blake Snell, who have all the same type of talent, different position, they struggle, and they get sent down? Like, what are you doing in redraft? Are you just simply comfortable cutting a guy like Blake Snell, and how aggressive would you be on a rookie that we don't really know how long he's going to stay up, like Ian Happ?
Well, it's a risk. I mean, the rookies are always a risk because you don't know how long they're going to stay up. And you don't know if you're going to be faced with a player like last year, Max Kepler, who struggled early in the season, got sent back down. And when he came back up, he was fine. And a lot of players, either they need that kick in the butt to realize that when they're in the majors, it's serious business and they have to get down and get their act together. Or guys who really just can't make that leap. And there are some guys who can't make that leap. Blake Snell might be one of those guys. We don't know that. But, you know, like they sent down Jose Berrios and he's back now and he's looking great. But he had great numbers in the minors last year. He couldn't make that leap last year. So he spends the offseason, he regroups, figures out what he needs to do, and he performs in the minors. And now hopefully he'll be back in the majors for good. Every minor leaguer takes a different path, and it's really just looking at the path that they take and see whether they're is the seeds for something that has legs. And a lot of times we don't know until they've been in the majors for a while and seeing how they adjust to the opposition.
I have a question about that because you talk about owning skills and you mentioned earlier about Eric Thames in AA. Is AA the cutoff where a player would prove themselves to you, or is it any level of the minor leagues and maybe even some college players that display power, whether it's power pitching, power hitting, you know, speed, whatever it is? Where is the level necessary for you to say this player owns this skill as far as batting average? And is it different for different statistics?
Different for different statistics. That's one I have to think about. But as far as the level, I would definitely say AA is I wouldn't go any further back down than AA. AA, I think, is when the competition is at a level that is showing the seeds of being major league worthy. Prior to that, the odds of a player making a jump from low A or high A or rookie level ball or any of those lower levels is so remote. It's such a long road. But once they've made it into AA, I think that's a significant accomplishment if they can succeed in AA. And I think that's the first point where you can look at those numbers and say, here, this is a guy who has some skills.
You know, I would throw an anecdote in here too, Bogman, with what you're saying, and to kind of follow in what Ron's saying is there are two instances in the minor leagues I can think of right now, and I'm going to be talking about this on Prospect One if people are into the prospects and want to hear more about this. But John Duplantier with the Arizona Diamondbacks, he's a prime example. We have a 22-year-old pitcher who's pitching in like low A with the Kane County Cougars, so he should be dominating. And people are going nuts, and I'm going nuts because his stuff looked really good. But he's also dominating at a level that doesn't tell the whole story, so people could get a little too excited. Then you move over to a player like Ronald Acuna with the Atlanta Braves, who went into single A.
Won't stop hitting homers.
Yeah, and then he
Every
just got brought
up
to double A.
Another homer.
And now he's up in double A, and he's a strikeout guy, but he's just dominating at double A. So you can start, I think, to agree with Ron here. Now we have Ronald Acuna, who killed single A, has now gone to double A, and he's the talk of the town. And all of these skills might actually be translated into a hot major league player. So you can see it from both ways. And I do agree with the double A. It comes a whole other ball game, Ron, when you start talking about like what Eric Thames went through, or take like Shohei Ohtani, you know, who's in a lesser competition and being compared to Babe Ruth right now, and it's going to be the talk of the town next year. You know, how are we going to treat the owning the skills for a player like Shohei Ohtani?
It's going to be tough. I mean, we have very few players who have that elevated skill level coming into the majors, and you know, making the jump and the cultural acclimation to the United States and American ball is going to play a part in that too. And we've seen it with both Cuban exports and Asian exports. They some of them take longer than others to make that adjustment, and we really don't know what Ohtani will do until he actually gets here.
Yeah.
Ryan, when I met you at First Pitch, you were going over BABs, and I was absolutely fascinated by BABs because I hate projections. I hate it when someone says, you know, I think this guy will hit about 20 homers, because everybody does it. Like, it's a natural thing to do. Like, if you would say, how many homers do you think Mike Moustakas is going to hit this year? You look and you say, you know, somewhere in the 15 to 20. It's like, based on what? And who was the guy that you brought up? Was it Alistatis Escobar? Was the very first guy that you brought up, because his batting average had gone to like 220 to 300 to back to 220 to 300. I loved it. And I really loved how you had pluses and minuses for all the stats. And it was the kind of what you do with your league. You know, if a guy has a skill, it's plus. So you can kind of find the values in there. What about players that are older or have come off of surgeries for pitchers like Albert Pujols, right? Albert Pujols, mm-hmm. can you say that the guy has hit 350 in his career? But over the last, you know, six or seven seasons, he hasn't been a very good hitter as far as batting average goes. It's, you know, between 258, 272, 244, 268, now 238 this year. Even though we say if he, shows the skill, he owns it, is there any instance in a long career like Albert Pujols or like, you know, Matt Harvey coming off of his injury that they no longer own a certain skill?
Well, yes, certainly. And you know, the whole aphorism of once you display a skill, you own it. I mean, it's a nice little sentence, but there really is a lot more color to it. I mean, the explanation in the baseball forecast that goes into more depth. And basically it says that, you know, first of all, it has to be that skill has to be demonstrated over a long period of time. I mean, a player with a 5 ERA who pitches, you know, a perfect game, that's not a skill that he owns. but you know, so that's kind of a logical thing. But also, I mean, age and injury is going to affect that. And a player like Albert Pujols, to players in their 30s who tend to be more injury prone, they're going to lose those skills. And then we look at the flip side of the coin, because once a player displays a vulnerability, he owns that too, or a skills deficiency. So, I mean, it really works both ways. And with players like Pujols or those guys who are becoming more injury prone, yeah, you have to take that into account.
Is there like a certain cutoff as far as years or games go where you can break it down where, okay, Pujols hasn't shown a 300 batting average in 3 years, so he no longer is elite in this? You know, I would say he's still pretty good. Is it like a year or 2 years, or how long would it take to I guess I'm trying to say it's – I know you said it's, you know, a whole color spectrum, but is there a certain cutoff point where you'd say this guy doesn't have any power anymore, this guy doesn't have command anymore? Is there a certain time set?
I don't think there's a certain time set, but I think as a general rule of thumb, the probability of a player correcting a skills deficiency, I think, declines it each year that deficiency exists. So after 1 year, the odds of him rebounding are fairly good. But after he's shown that deficiency for 2 years or 3 years, it gets tougher and tougher to project a rebound. I think that's basically what you could say.
And I was going to say, Scott, it's funny because you know how I always am the person that I have a really hard time with late bloomers. Like,
yeah,
late bloomers, I don't believe in them, and I get super, like, I just am like, oh, no, I'm not interested in Adam Duvall last year. You know, then the guy gets 30-plus home runs, that type of stuff. And it's kind of along to, like, what Ron's saying. Like, as every year goes by, and especially when you're young coming into the older age, and it's like, well, this guy hasn't done anything since he was, you know, 26 years old. Why do I think this is going to click now? And sometimes it's just simply service time. And then the same thing kind of, like, on the inverse. It's like when these older guys, you know, as age comes up and the statistics diminish, there's not a whole lot outside of, you know, a performance enhancer that's going to tell me a player is going to improve off of those, like, negative stances down. But that's my whole issue with the late bloomers.
Another Chandlerism I love, Ron, is exercise excruciating patience. I yes. love it, because so many people like to panic in the first month or month and a half in the season. What do we have to see at this point in the season to cut or trade a player we were expecting more from? And do you have any examples of players for this year?
It's tough. You know, it's there's no real rule of thumb. 1 month is really not a long enough time. I mean, sometimes a full season is not a long enough time to get a full read on a player's skill. I mean, really. I mean, there's been studies done that shown that a player's batting average doesn't stabilize for 900 at-bats, which is basically two seasons.
Right.
So if a guy hits 230 1 year and 270 the next year, that's not a trend. That's probably just a 250 hitter. So, I mean, it's that type of thing that it's really tough to get a handle on, especially since, you know, in our game, we need to make decisions pretty quickly.
Yeah.
For me anyway, there's a type of player that I tend to stay away from if they're struggling early in the season like this. And these are guys who, and again, it's an experience thing. These are guys who may have had a great rookie year or a great partial rookie year, who are struggling now. And this year, there are like a whole bunch of them. I mean,
I was about to say, do you call this the Trevor Story effect? Do you call it?
Yeah. We might as well. I mean, it's him. It's Dansby Swanson. It's Hunter Renfro. I mean, all these guys who had great small and larger samples of performance last year that was exemplary, and they're struggling big time this year. And part of the reason is that the book is now out. I mean, the opposition really didn't get a chance to see them long enough last year to get a full read on their skill. And I'll be honest, even Trey Turner's in that class too. And now that the book is out, these players have to come back and adjust. And in this early going now, they're having trouble adjusting. Now, depending upon how good a player they are, we hope that they will turn things around pretty quickly, but it's not at all surprising that these guys are struggling now, and you have to decide how long you want to give them until you have cut bait, and that's a tough decision.
You know,
what about pitchers? Sorry, the Welsh. No, what about what about pitchers? Because we're having a lot of problems with the DL this year and pitchers struggling and being bad. Are there any that you would move away from, or are there some guys that you are just, I got to hang on to my pitchers because of this injury outbreak this year?
No. Well, I mean, you always have to stockpile pitchers. You never have enough pitching. But, you know, high-level prospects, you know, Snell got sent down, Tyler Glasnow, Gesellman on the Mets. I mean, these were guys who looked pretty decent last year and are really struggling a lot this year. These are guys I would probably cut bait on for now. But, you know, guys like Andrew Triggs are doing well. Andreessen on Tampa is doing pretty well. I mean, these are guys who seem to be hanging in there. But, you know, again, this is an entire game of adjustments. And once the opposition adjusts to you, you got to adjust back. And until you reach a stable point where you can better assess your actual skill level. But it's tough. And this year, again, with the DL situation, it's just nuts.
This is like advice now I want to give because this is amazing. I think you need, if you haven't already done this, you need to have some shirts. It's like branding. Exercising excruciating patience. That's like the best saying ever. You need to sell shirts of that. It reminds me of Bogner, of like our new Well Shorter and all the like wrestling things. That's like the executioner of excruciating patience. I think that's an amazing term. So we need to crowdsource here to get these all made. I want to follow up on one thing you said though, Ron, which I guess part of what we're all doing here, because sometimes when we have guests on, we like to just really hit every single player and do all the current stuff. But I think it's fun in this instance to really kind of get into your mind a little bit because you have incredible experience. You have experience that, and I know you know this, but you have experience that outlasts many people that are playing the fantasy sport right now, and that's worth a whole lot. Where did you value Trey Turner coming into the season? Was he were you a first round Turner guy? Were you a second round Turner guy? Where how did you see him?
I had him in the third round.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I think you kind of maybe you could expand on this because I think that is going to kind of answer where I was going. Is I was curious is where do you start to discern the difference between some of these? I would put them risk laden. I've put a comp to this before. It's very similar to like poker, where you have older poker players who have played a long time are a lot less risk averse. Like they're going to take a lot less risk. They're only going to play the good hands. Where you have the young guys who want to get in and bluff and they want to play a lot of cards. Where I notice, you know, a lot more seasoned fantasy players are risk averse, which kind of leads to what you just did. Trey Turner in the third round, that means you're not drafting him. I was curious where you banked him across some of these other type of sophomore guys, but you just pretty much what you were talking about, you weren't willing to be in on the Trey Turner stuff because of the diminishing kind of sophomore returns.
Oh, absolutely. And Gary Sanchez, the same thing. He was not on my radar. I was more on to Wilson Contreras or Lucroy than Sanchez. You know, Sanchez was in some leagues, he was the first catcher off the board. Most leagues, the second or third. I like to look as far into the stats as I can. And, you know, as much as Trey Turner put up phenomenal numbers last year, one of the things you could do when you have a smaller sample size is actually look at the schedule. And one of the things that I saw with Turner is that for 38 out of his last 48 games of the season, he was facing sub 500 teams. Against those teams, he batted like 365. So he was beating up on bad competition in September on top of it when the rosters are diluted anyway. So, I mean, where was all these big numbers coming from? They were coming from performance against poor competition. So I wasn't buying into it at all. And the power, clearly not, because he never showed that in the minors. But I saw him as potentially a 10 to 15 homer, 25-30 stolen base guy, 280 batting average. And for me, that was like a late second, early third rounder. So that's where I had him.
Like Jonathan Villar this year. Last question and then just a comment. Then we're going to get into the player debates here. This is the last kind of honing in on where your mindset goes. Take a player like JD Martinez, who coming into the season, very popular on base guy and good lineup with Detroit, take away maybe the injuries. How do you balance, and how are you balancing? I'm going to put two players against each other. One that you seem to be in on Eric Thames, and you're kind of buying the skills. You know it's going to come down a little bit. How do you balance out a player like JD Martinez, who spent a decent amount of time on the DL, has come back, has been good, against a player who has rocked the fantasy world for the first 6 weeks of the season? Like, what side would you want, JD Martinez or Eric Thames at this point, rest of season?
Assuming Martinez is healthy, and that's always a big if, I would lean towards him because he's got a longer track record. And Thames, you know, even though he's doing well and will probably keep it up at some level, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that pitchers may figure out a weakness and exploit it at some point. Whereas Martinez is gone through those battles already. He's gone through it. He's put up now, you know, three solid seasons of excellent numbers. So I would expect that would be less of a concern with Martinez than would be with Thames.
Okay, we're going to get into player debates here. The last thing that was in my brain, I was thinking about this, and you had to have done this. And if you haven't, it's got to be a future thing, and people need to bug everybody about this. Have you done, since you've had a really good wide spectrum of seeing players over 30 years of, you know, different variations of success, and fantasy scoring. I mean, scoring has changed. Have you done like a Ron Chandler all-time fantasy roster? Like, I was thinking in my head, like what would your outfield be? Would it be like Barry Bonds, Mike Trout, and like Ken Griffey Jr., you know, over time? Who would be your shortstop? Have you done anything like that?
Not specifically like that, but one of the features on RonChandler.com is a rotisserie Hall of Fame. So we've set rotisserie benchmarks based upon their dollar values each year and how often they've been in the top 15 and things along those lines. We've set these benchmarks, and players we inaugurate players into the Hall of Fame each year. So it's we've got about 100 players in there since the 1980s, which is when the rotisserie era began. And we look at their stats based upon their rotisserie earnings. And
who's the most surprising guy in there? One that everybody'd be like, no way. Are there any?
Be like Juan Pierre.
Well, Juan Pierre's in there.
Is he? I mean, that's awesome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, he was a 300 hitter. He stole tons of bases. I mean, he was a rotisserie god on the base paths.
Juan Pierre every single year he played.
Yeah.
I took him every year because it was just take Juan Pierre. He doesn't get hurt, and he wins you stolen bases and be done with it.
Yeah, the top two earning players in all time, the top two earning players are Barry Bonds and Ricky Henderson. There's really nothing surprising about that. These are the players who were the cornerstones of our teams over the years, and so they rightfully are in the Hall of Fame.
Any front runners for 2017, or people just need to go to RonChandler.com to find out?
Yeah, check it out. We've got the list of all the players there. It's free access. Just check it out. It's right there.
All right, check it out. RonChandler.com.
All right, you know what's coming up after this break. You know him. You love him. World famous. World renowned. Everybody knows it. Prestige worldwide.
Worldwide.
Player debates with Ron Chandler after this break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, Ron, how we do this with player debates is pretty simple. It's kind of actually what we just did with JD Martinez and Eric Thames. We're going to have a battle of players. Maybe it's one has a hot performance so far this season, one was a preseason darling but hasn't performed well, or even two guys that have just kind of meshed into their value close here. And we're going to just pick who we want rest of season with a little synopsis of why. First one up, we're going on the middle infield here. Starlin Castro versus DJ LeMahieu. One was easily the preseason ranker here, and DJ LeMahieu has not been quite as good as we had hoped. Starlin Castro has been he's been a monster, as a matter of fact, actually, this season. So, Ron, what do you think? Rest of season, Starlin Castro, DJ LeMahieu, where do you go?
I go with LeMahieu. I think Castro's gotten off to a great start. He's actually one of the players I cover in my article about once you display a skill, because Castro has shown the ability in the past to be a 300 hitter. I don't think he's going to be hitting 340 or 350. He could very well end up at 300. But again, he's been a 250, a 260 hitter over the last few years. So the track record isn't there for him to sustain it with as high a confidence as LeMahieu, who's shown the ability to put up bigger numbers. And again, here in the middle of May, I think the sample size is still too small. LeMahieu, he had a bad April, but he's batting 320 in May. So I think he's going to come around. The number's going to come up, and I would stick with LeMahieu for the rest of the year.
What do you think, Boggs?
God, I really want to take Castro because LeMahieu's one homer so far is really bothering me. But I know that he will also steal bases. He's in the Rockies lineup. He plays in Colorado. You know, I mean, it's not like Castro's in a bad lineup or a bad ballpark or anything. But I'm going to take LeMahieu, but I'm like begrudgingly taking LeMahieu because I know Starlin Castro has been good in the past, and I think he could have another good season. But I think I'm going to stick with my guns for right now.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you guys, and it is tough. Somebody had asked me a question on Twitter about it. Actually, no, you know what it was? It was the should I drop Ian Happ for Kinsler or Castro? And I was like, well, I just probably wouldn't pick up Happ. I mean, the Cubs could easily keep him up the rest of the season. I'm not sure I'm there with that. It's such a log jam. But if I were to drop one, it would be Castro. And someone chimed in like, you can't drop Castro. He's a points magnet. And I agree. I totally agree. It's been awesome. Last 30 days.
Like, practically, yeah, did you see me? I said don't drop anybody.
Yeah, he's hitting 350. He's got five homers. But we're just in one of those situations where I just don't trust Castro. I don't trust him in New York. They've got guys that are just ready in the wings. I mean, if I'm New York, this is a piece. I'm trading Castro. I'm moving him off to a team that can – I'm moving up to the Cardinals or something like that, someone who's contending at some point. So the job is just for so long, and he's going to taper down. Starlin Castro's not a 340 guy. DJ LeMahieu is a 300 guy. The stolen bases – We might have to chalk DJ LeMahieu up to one of those players. We're just never going to get the stolen bases we think anymore. Like every year it's going to be 15 and we're like, man, he should have 25. Homers will come. It's such a great offense in Colorado. I'm going to agree. We're going to sweep it. DJ LeMahieu. But it's tough. It's tough because this is one of those few instances where you're taking the player that has preseason value over the player that is just dominating right now.
Ron, you take Kinsler over both these guys, right? Even though Kinsler is off to a bad start.
Absolutely.
Okay. Just want to make sure I'm not missing anything on Ian Kinsler. How about Matt Moore versus Jose Berríos? Matt Moore has been struggling, but he just had a pretty good start last night. Jose Berríos obviously came in and had a very good start in his first start in the bigs this year. Which one of these guys would you prefer for the rest of the season?
I'm not a huge Matt Moore fan. I mean, he's the last two starts he pitched at home were excellent starts. But overall, this is really a pitcher with a 4.50 ERA. Over the last 6 years, basically, his xFIP has been in the mid-4s. That's really who he is. And he's going to have some good starts every once in a while. But I don't really see any upside here. Whereas Berríos, he had a great year in the minors last year. He was terrible on his call-up last year. But this is a good pitcher. And I think he's showing it now, and I think there's a lot of upside here. And I think the fact that there is upside, whereas with Moore, there really is not any upside. I would lean towards Berríos here.
That's interesting. I like how you put that because this one is tough because this is a little bit more of the proven guy. I'm not a Bogman. You were a Matt Moore-ish guy. I've never been a big Matt Moore guy, but I did pick him up. He got dropped in a league, and I swooped him up, and I think it was our Champions League. But here's this really interesting thing that's going on with these two guys. Jose Berríos' skills translate better to fantasy. You know what I mean? We're talking strikeouts. We want the strikeouts. I mean, him pitching an AL versus NL pitcher, that's a little bit of a negative. But just his strikeout skills and, just being able to come in, strike out 10, he can go long innings, they're good. So then you'd come over to Matt Moore and you'd be like, okay, well, he's NL. He's done it before. Maybe he's more consistent. I don't think Matt Moore is any more consistent or of a safety net than Jose Berríos is. Jose Berríos could get blown up in a game. But Matt Moore's been getting blown up in games. He has like a really good game, and then he gets blown up in two games. So in this instance, I would go with the guy that I think has the better skills, which is Jose Berríos, and he translates better to fantasy. And if I had the choice between the two, I'm actually going to agree. I'm going to go with Berríos here. What do you think, Boggs?
I'm going to take Matt Moore still. I'm not very happy about it, but I just feel like Jose Berríos has a couple bad starts and he goes right back down. Whereas, Matt Moore could wind up finding his stride. I feel like the skill is still there for him. He was minor league, player of the year, whatever, 1 year, or pitcher of the year, number one prospect, whatever it was. I'm still kind of excited about Matt Moore, but my excitement is kind of trending downward for him for sure, just because he hasn't shown it yet. I feel like he's going to come in and show it at some point. He just hasn't been there. What I want to ask both of you guys, Ivan Nova versus both of these dudes. I know that Nova doesn't strike anybody out, but he is always throwing up quality starts. He never walks anybody. He had a walk today, and it was not a walk. I was watching the game. The ball was way inside, and it got called a ball for whatever reason. If you had to pick between Ivan Nova or either one of these guys who have much higher, you know, I guess I'm going to use the word Spore hates, upside, which would you take, Nova or one of these dudes?
I would take Nova. I mean, because he's got a track record of performance that we can look at and project out. And his, even though last year he had an ERA over four, his skills showed that he probably should have had an ERA closer to 3.50. So, and that's essentially what he's doing this year too. Even with a low two ERA, his xFIP is around 3.5. So that's the type of pitcher he is. And I think that's where he probably will end up. And since he's shown that over a longer period of time, I would be more comfortable with him.
Boy, I will take Nova over Matt Moore for sure. But I kind of think I got to not be hypocritical. I probably need to stick with my argument as far as the skills, the fantasy skills that I'm looking for. I mean, obviously, if you play in a standard 5x5, you want your wins. So Ivan Nova covers that, and he's keeping the walks down is fantastic. He's really having just a great season. It's just I have a hard time believing this is going to continue, and maybe that's going to be my deficiency. His strikeout numbers are just bottom barrel. So I would actually probably lean – I'm going to say Berríos.
It is tough.
I'm going to say Berríos, but like I don't think I could actually make that choice, like if it were cutting Nova for Berríos for a couple more games to know, because the Minnesota Twins have just tinkered with Berríos for 2 years now. Like they're like, he's not coming up anytime soon, and then like next day he's getting called up. So like I don't trust that he could stay up for long enough. So I don't think I could make the move of Nova for Berríos, but if Berríos were up for the rest of the season, that would be the guy that I would want. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I think I'm becoming less of a K whore.
Yeah,
I'm becoming less of it because just some of them are so prone to the blow up. And if you're playing head to head, like we play a lot of head to head, the Welsh, it ruins your entire week.
Yeah, you know, Nova and NL too.
Drives me crazy.
Nova and NL too. There's something to consider. Here's the last one. This is a tough one, and I'm very excited to see where this goes. But let's start with Bogman, and then I'll go so we can finish with Ron here. These are two third basemen that are kind of on different trajectories on both ends of how they were drafted and where they're being perceived right now. Kyle Seager versus Miguel Sano. Bogman, you start, then I'll go, and then we will leave it to our guest, Ron Chandler.
This is tough for me to flush out because I despise Kyle Seager going into the season, not because his skills are bad or he's a bad player or whatever. I just feel like he was being so overdrafted, right? I feel like you could have taken Jake Lamb where you're getting Kyle Seager. You're getting the same type of player, but
agreed.
You're just getting him a couple rounds later, and you can take a better player there. So I have to kind of just get that out of my head. And if I'm going between Seager and Sano, I think I'm still going to go Seager because he's done it longer and he's more proven. I don't think I'm as worried as Ron is about the contact rate with Sano because I think we just kind of know what he is. He's just a masher. Like I don't expect this, batting average to stick around for Miguel Sano. He's not going to hit .299 the whole year. I don't expect that. So I don't think I'm as worried about it, but I think that Seager is still probably the better player, even though he is super streaking. It drives me crazy. So I think I'm gonna take Seager. I take Seager, also still begrudgingly. This is a begrudgingly player debate.
It is kind of begrudging. This is a tough one for me too. I'm not a big Seager guy, but I wasn't necessarily this huge Miguel Sano guy, and there's just no denying that he's coming down. It's a 4.23 BAPIP. Is bonkers. That's just not who average he is.
ISO isn't going to be 374.
Yeah, and it's really weird too to see a guy that's like 33% striking out but walking 20% of the time. That's just like he's just a crazy oddity to me. But his numbers are – I got a hard time denying what he's doing. And, I mean, at this point, he's going to walk himself into – regardless of how much he struggles. He's got to – I mean, I say that, knock on wood. Famous last words here. He's going to walk himself into 25 homers this year. And he seems to be dialed in. He's a young dude. It's taken a couple years from him to make the adjustment. I remember him being up at 22. He's 24 years old now. I'm not bullish on Miguel Sano, where I'm like a lot of people where I'd consider him, you know – his rank of what he's doing. But in this instance, I am going to go Miguel Sano and hope at the end of the day, I'm not going to get the average, but the other counting stats, you know, stolen bases don't matter here, but I'm going to get homers, runs, and RBIs from Sano over Seager. But Ron, what do you think? Break up the tie here. Kyle Seager, Miguel Sano, rest of season.
Yeah, I would kind of lean towards Seager. It's know, it's interesting. There are two metrics here that I'm looking at. The first is that Seager has a home run to fly ball rate now of only 5%, which is very, very low. That's it's not something that's sustainable at that level. You know, league average is about 10-12%. His average for his career is 12-15%. So 5% is not going to stick. So he's going to start hitting his home runs again. That the balls are starting to start going out of the stadium. Whereas Sano, his home run to fly ball rate is over 30%, which is unsustainable. Yeah. So his power is going to probably come down. Seager's is probably going to come up. And the contact rate, again, it's still the 58% for Sano is just way too low. And Seager's is 81%, which is far more sustainable over the course of the season. I think we're just looking at, you know, two players who have gotten off to a slow start and a hot start, you know, through 6 weeks of the season. And things are going to start the planets are going to start to align sooner rather than later, and we'll see these numbers return to what we'd expect them to be.
That's pretty interesting. Miguel Sano, also, you look at it, he's swinging less outside of the zone the last 3 years, and he's swinging more inside the zone. So you got these skills. You know, these guys are going to balance out. It's two worlds colliding here. They're probably going to end up meeting in the middle, and ranks will be right in the middle, of course. He is Ron Chandler. You can find him on Twitter, at Ron Chandler. Please go visit ronchandler.com, and you can find a bunch of his great work over at ESPN. Ron, last parting word here. This is a weird question, but like what's next? Like, what's like the thing that you'd like to do next? Because you kind of probably seen it all. I mean, you're writing for ESPN. You got your own website, highly revered in the industry, and you deserve it. Is there anything next that you're looking to accomplish?
You know, as I settle in here, I'm turning 60 this year, if you can believe it. So I've been doing this for a very long time, and I've got a couple of book projects that in the works here. So I'm thinking I've got two or three book projects I'd like to be able to find the time to do. So that's probably next on the docket here.
Okay, well, beautiful. Nice. When you get them going, you hit us up. We'll get you on, and we'll be glad to talk about it. He is Ron Chandler. Ron, we really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, guys. It's been my pleasure.
All right, well, we want to thank Ron Chandler for taking out the time for lowbrowing it with the ITL boys, Bogman and myself here. Man, I mean,
you didn't pitch him slobber. I was kind of surprised by that.
I didn't. If you're just tuning in, if you're not easily offended, go listen to the beginning of the show. I tell a story that has absolutely no merit, but I'm just going to attach it to the Mets being out here. And I created a brand new app that definitely could not be advertised anywhere whatsoever. That's what we do, I guess. A whole bunch more coming up in the second hour. We are going to be covering a bunch of the crazy stuff that's been going on, injuries and the slumping baseball players. And we're going to see if these guys can turn it around. We have got a new game called Guess Who? And we're going to get to your questions from the ITL ball back. So don't go anywhere. It's Bogman the Welsh for In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's hour two of In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. That right there, that's Scott Bogman. I am the Welsh. If you're offended at all in hour one by our potentially new app that Matt Harvey may or may not have had anything to do with, don't come to us. Go talk to a wall. Maybe do that. Maybe hit up the Slobber app and you can complain to those guys. Hit the help button there. So we have got a whole bunch we're going to cover. We're playing Guess Who in the next segment. We're going to be doing the ball bag at the end of the show. But we have got a couple things we want to cover here because, I mean, injuries are rampant. Josh Donaldson is coming back from the DL. Apparently, it was supposed to be like
so
Monday.
They say.
Yeah, it's supposed to be Monday, but now they're saying the weekend. But because the fantasy gods will not, have their souls taken away.
Chicken, arise. Arise, chicken. Arise.
Arise, chicken. Arise.
They then put AJ Pollock on the DL because you have to, pay one for one, apparently.
What a surprise, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's really surprised that AJ Pollock is hurt.
Yeah, definitely not you. I'm disappointed. And we're going to cover some of the slumping players, but speaking of DL, one of the bigger moves that happened was Aroldis Chapman was kind of out of, I just didn't know what was going on. And all of a sudden, he's out a month. It was out of nowhere.
Shoulder inflammation is like middle of an at-bat, and he just was grabbing at his shoulder, and there he goes.
Yeah,
good thing that the Yankees have like 8 million other closers.
Well, and Betances Betances immediately moves into like top 7 closer territory, especially this season. But this is really interesting. You found this online. I want to talk about this for a minute, and then I want to hit some of these struggling players. So Bogman found this Reddit thread that what it says is 20% into the season, by his count, 16 closer jobs have temporarily or permanently changed hands, which I just want to point out, that doesn't mean 16 separate teams have changed closers. Like, some of these teams have changed multiple times, but we've already seen that closer jobs change 16
times. It's more like
times.
The Jersey Shore. It's more like the situation.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
The situation has changed, not all the teams. But I want you just like – this is a well-thought-out post.
Yeah, that's very good.
Put together – and I thought it was excellent. That's why I wanted to bring it up. But look at the person's name.
Let me look at
who
that.
Posted this. Derek. Every person on Reddit has some crazy ass name.
This very well thought out post is by Daryl Humps Gophers.
Daryl Humps Gophers.
What does
Gophers.
That even mean?
I found this out because I think Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about this on an AMA or somebody.
That Daryl Humps
about
Gophers?
It. No. He's like, I love how you can get a well thought out question from a person whose Reddit name is a potato in my anus. And I always thought about that. And now I look at the names when people
post. It got hit. Okay, so here are some of the changes that have already happened so far this season. Britton went to Brach. Ottavino went to Holland. That happened like pretty much as the season started. K-Rod went to Justin Wilson. Houston Street has changed to Bedrosian and Bud Norris. So that's happened twice. Feliz has pushed the job over to Neville. Familia
and back to Feliz.
And back to Feliz. Yeah, you're right.
Use them both.
Yeah, you're right about that. Familia to Reed. Ryan Madsen to Santiago. Philly's a mess from Jeanmar Gomez to Benoit to Neris. Melanson to Derek Law, which you could almost actually throw in Hunter Strickland, potentially. Sam Dyson to Matt Bush. And then Washington, this actually, he's missing one here too, because it's Treenan to Kelly to Glover to Kelly to Matt Albers, who's had a couple saves.
And this is, like I said, but before the Chapman injury. So Chapman to Betances as well.
It's crazy. And it's a good point. You don't pay for saves, man.
But here's my question. Looking at this, all right, are you more likely to buy the higher end guys that we don't think are losing their job at all? Or because we've already lost Britton and Chapman for an extended period of time, are you saying screw that? Like, I guess what I'm asking is, are you more likely to buy the high end guys than pay for the later ones now?
That's
because
always
of this stuff.
I mean, okay, so it's interesting. Preseason, this is where this would be a struggle for me, because preseason I was not a Britton, Chapman, Jansen guy. I was a Kimbrell, Davis, Holland. Holland was my big guy this year. I was right on the middling guys that could potentially be top end, or I would wait a little bit. You know, my one bomb would have been like Edwin Diaz, who's someone I was on. But those other guys have paid off relatively. It's been a pretty, you know, positive turn for taking those. So now if you're saying in season, would I be willing to pay the price for the high end guys that haven't got hurt when Chapman and Britton go down? I don't know. I think the cost is going to be even greater because of the pool that's being diminished.
That's part of it too. It's the pool is being diminished. So, you know, there's less top end guys available, obviously. But is it just too risky to pay for any of them?
Yeah, I think so.
And I think that's where – I mean, it's – you know, a lot of people – this isn't breaking news to most people. A lot of people just have that philosophy anyway.
Yeah.
I've always liked the high-end guys, but I think I may be changing my tune a little bit because of Chapman and Britton going down. I mean, some of these guys are going to be fine, and there's some gems in here too, but it's it's difficult to pick out the one that's going to work.
And the strategy of maybe getting guys like Iglesias and Cody Allen later, and then pairing them with players like Davinsky, Archie Bradley, Betances, that theoretically is going to be the bigger payoff, you know, especially if Bradley takes a job. Davinsky, I don't know about, but Betances is getting the job. Even players that have gone out and speculated on Trevor Rosenthal over I think that has those are smart little moves to start playing with. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, this season, amongst many things, is telling us you can't pay for saves. But I would also – I want to counter this into the other point we were going to talk about. I think this season of most seasons has really played in – to one of my philosophies of value drafting. I really do, because look at the players. We put together a list of some top-end players. I mean, and this isn't a perfect list, of course, because, you know, a lot of these guys are going to return. There's a lot of guys that you never would have saw, and you're not going to not draft some of these players. But what I'm saying is when you value-based draft and you don't overreach, you end up with – it can pay off. This could definitely bottom out, because now that I'm looking at some of these players, I could see teams that have – you know, Miguel Cabrera, Andrew McCutcheon, and, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr., something like that. But I think with the unknowns, the crazy amount of DLs that we've had, everybody's rostering DL spots, and some of these struggling players, I think value-based drafting, the little separation of the player just a tiny bit to not go nuts, is paying off. But look at some of these players. Bogman, read off some of the struggling high-end players from this season.
Well, Manny Machado, he's only hitting 221. We have Anthony Rizzo hitting 213. Miguel Cabrera is hitting 238, which isn't as bad as those other guys, but he only has four homers. Edwin Encarnacion at 206. Cargo, oof, 213 with only two bombs. I mean, those five right there are really the big ones. Like, I'm not really worried about Machado or Rizzo, are you?
I'm not. And actually, you know, where something would backfire with me, a strategy I had this season was taking pitching late. I could have had a team that had like Machado and Cabrera. Like that's definitely a team that I could have rostered. I don't. Of all these players that you just listed, the only player that I actually own anywhere is Miguel Cabrera. I don't own any of those other guys in a single league that I have. They just, you know, because they were a lot of E5 was overdrafted this year. I think Cargo was getting overdrafted this year. Rizzo was right where he should be. Machado was right where he should be. And I thought Miggy was a value, so I was all over Miggy this year.
You know, it's weird because I don't feel like I feel okay about all these guys still. Like, what's the biggest risk out of these guys? Like, Machado and Rizzo, obviously, I think you don't have a problem with either one of those guys.
Yeah, but
right?
What's risk? Like, you mean like
what
I should
I'm
trade this away
who
now?
Who's most likely to just bottom out and keep on this horrible projection? Is it Edwin to you? Is it Cargo to you?
I think it's always E5. I've been less of an E5 guy, but here's what I would tell you. I don't think Cargo and E5 hold much value. I think actually that players like Machado and Rizzo, I think they can get better, but will they be last year? I don't think so, but I think those are the only two that hold the biggest trade value. And I think personally, I think Machado's a prime player to trade away that you could, like, I've seen many people have tweeted us about Machado, and I've seen like Lindor and Archer for Machado. And if you have a struggle in your pitching, I think you can do that trade
do
in,
that
a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I would do that.
And you can do that right
Lindor's
now.
Lindor's added power this year too.
Totally agree.
You don't think that Edwin or Cargo are going to get you anything back? Like,
not that's worth it. E5 is traditionally a second half player.
Would you trade Marcell Ozuna, your Marcell Ozuna, who ranks 19, I'm looking at OBP standings, but he ranks 19 in an OBP league, hitting 316 with 11 homers for Carlos Gonzalez right now.
Man, I don't think I could. I'm definitely a buy high players, low type of guy. That's definitely my move. I just think Ozuna is just, I think he's dialed in. I don't think he's going to be like top 30 overall this year.
What about Yonder Alonso?
I would do that. Even though Alonso's having a great season, he's really,
he
really
is.
Good. I think Cargo will improve. I guess my thing is I just don't know if Cargo improves past Ozuna, and Ozuna's doing it now. So
would you trade like a hot, like Aaron Judge to get E5? Because E5 is a guy who could return you second round value.
I agree. And actually, E5 is another one of those players I'd love to buy, but Aaron Judge is way too much. He's too good right now. Like there's got to be a point, especially with like the you know, the traders out there. You need to be, Aaron Judge should be bringing top dollar right now, and E5 hitting 200. Unfortunately, I just don't think it's top dollar. I mean, you could do the move. I don't think anyone's going to kill you, and it may even out midseason. I just think you can get more.
Would you trade, let me see here, your Giancarlo Stanton for Miguel Cabrera?
Ooh.
Because it's not like Stanton is having – I mean, he's having a good power year like he always does. He already has 11 homers, but he's hitting 259. It's not fantastic.
I'm a Miggy guy, and I think he gets better. If I wasn't great at first base, you know, if I wasn't able to pick up, you know, Zimmerman or Lonzo, and I was just, you know, had like Duda there or something like that, there's probably every scenario I'd probably do this. But I mean, you have to give it second consideration. If you were rostering like Joey Votto and you had – four good outfielders and the fifth was bleh, and then you're trading Stanton away, like that might be sketchy, but in a vacuum I would trade Stanton for Miggy. Yes.
All right, how about some of these you know, those are some front end players. How about some of these guys that we got a little bit later than that, like Rogi Odor is still hitting under 200 at 197. Your boy Schwarber is 179. My guy McCutcheon is hitting 212. The Todd father is hitting 181. Jose Bautista is hitting 182. What is your concern level on these type of players? Because these can give you I mean, would you be surprised if any of these guys, you know, gave you first round value at some point? You know,
at this point, yeah. But like, this is rock bottom for all these dudes. Like this, to me, in May, there's no way any of these players are within 25 to 30 points of this average right now. I don't see it. I think Jose Bautista, he's heating up. Todd Frazier, he's not great, but he's not a 180
hitter. What is May? You mean at the end of
May?
Yeah,
I meant like later in the year. Like we're mid-May.
Okay.
To me, this is rock bottom on all these players. I'm legit worried about Schwarber. That one's bothering me. McCutcheon, I think, might be a lost cause. Odor, I would buy on. And Frazier and Bautista's value is probably so low, I could see buying on them. But Schwarber and McCutcheon are actually my biggest worries here. I know they'll get better, but boy, I mean, Schwarber hitting 179. This is like, there is too much talent on that roster for, you know,
right.
It's going to give a reason for Madden to occasionally start to bench, you know, play him less, like play him almost catcher amount, you know, because he brought up Ian Happ and everything.
Would you give up any of these dudes to get my favorite player in the world, Kevin Pillar?
No,
Kevin Pillar is hitting 314, 5 homers, 6 RBIs.
Nope.
Nope. How about Jay Bruce hitting 274, 10 bombs already?
Maybe Bautista.
Your guy Chris Owings. Already 8 swipes, probably going to hit leadoff for a while now that AJ Pollock is gone.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think so. I get where you're going with that.
I think you got to ride these guys out. Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I think what we've kind of found out is you're more willing to trade the high-end guys to get stuff back than you are the middle-end guys because these guys don't have the name to return a decent value.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what about some lower-name guys, even lower than those? Mikel Franco hitting 209, Jackie Bradley 182. I mean, are these guys droppable, tradable? What are you doing with guys like that?
I mean, you know, if you're sitting in a world and if you have Franco and you need a corner infielder and Yonder Alonso sitting out there, yeah, you can drop Franco. I think you could probably drop both of these guys. Hate dropping Jackie Bradley Jr., but, I mean, 182, it's mid-May. He doesn't have the same stay power as a guy like Jose Bautista or McCutcheon. Yeah, I think you can cut Jackie Bradley Jr. if you need to.
Yeah, I think I'm more willing to trade the Odor, Schwarber, McCutcheon, that group, to get some hot guys, the Welsh, if my team is lower in the standings. The Bradley and Francos, I'm more like you with those. Like, you're not going to get anything back.
Yeah, probably just get out of it.
Yeah, depending on the depth of your league. If you're in a 10-man, they're absolutely droppable. 12-man, it's a little tougher. 14 to 16, I don't think I would drop them. I would, you know, wait, maybe give it another 2 or 3 weeks. But I think I'm with you. It's tough, man, because
struggles are real.
Yeah, the struggles are real this year because there's so many DL spots. I mean, I didn't even put pitchers on here because you just can't cut your pitchers.
No, they're
all going on the disabled.
Yeah, and we talked about that last week. So the key here is there's more to be had. There's more conversation to be had. Tune in to the ITL Fantasy Baseball Podcast on Thursdays where it's Bogman and I, and we cover a lot of stuff like this. Mondays is the guest episode, and if you missed any of this episode, obviously go back to Hour 1. You can on-demand it with Ron Chandler. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to be playing Guess Who. Now, the stats are a little bit old when you're listening to this, but you can kind of still play along. I give some hints. I'm going to pit two players against one stat line, and Bogman is going to have to guess who that player is. What a shocker for that game. You never would have guessed what we were going to do in that game. And then we got the ITL ball bag, which is your questions. We're going to be covering all of that the rest of this hour. It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, we're back. It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Bogman. It's the Welsh. Just us for this hour. I've got a game, one stat line, two players, no cups are involved, Bogman. It is called Guess Who. Let's play now. How it's going to work, it's just a variation of blind plays. Just trying to be creative here. I am going to give you a stat line, and I'm going to give you two players. And you're going to have to guess which player.
I'm ready.
It's the layman's version of blind plays. Everybody can play along. As you hear them, I've got 4 this week with little variations. I'll change up even like the last one. You ready to play Guess Who, Bogman?
Let's play it.
All righty. Over the last 30 days, here's a stat line for these two players. 20 runs, 6 homers, 16 RBIs, 5 stolen bases, hitting .344. So over the last 30 days, 20 runs, 6 homers, 16 RBIs, 5 stolen bases, hitting .344. That is some damn stuffing things if I've ever seen it in my life. Here are the two players, one of which owns this stat line. New York Yankees, Aaron Hicks, or red hot Aaron Altherr. Two guys that people are losing their minds about. Everyone wants to make sure Aaron Hicks potentially could be the everyday outfielder, which no one can promise that's going to happen. Aaron Altherr is ridiculous and fending off every prospect that could come up and has essentially become a must-own. Bogman, 20 runs, 6 homers, 16 RBIs, 5 stolen bases, hitting .344. You tell me who this player is. Aaron Hicks, Aaron Altherr.
I think it's Hicks because I feel like all of Althea's homers have been in the last 3 days. And he's got 3 three-run shots like 3 days straight or whatever it is. So Hicks has been sprinkling in here and there. He's been at the top of the waiver wire in a bunch of my leagues for a while. I'm going to go with Hicks.
Final answer.
Final answer, Hicks.
You are correct, sir. Yes. Aaron Hicks with 20 runs, 6 homers, 16 RBIs, 5 stolen bases, hitting .344. Would you like to know what Aaron Altherr's numbers are over the last 30 days, though?
Let's hear. Is it only the 3 homers?
Here you go. Aaron Hicks had 20 runs. Aaron Altherr had 18. Aaron Hicks had 6 homers. Aaron Altherr, 6 homers.
Oh, he also had 6. Okay.
Aaron Hicks had 16 RBIs. Altherr had 19 RBIs. Hicks had 5 stolen bases. Altherr had 3. And then the final, Aaron Altherr out-hit him, hitting .353 over the last 30 days. So when you look at it, they're tied in homers, and they go 2-2. So they're relatively even, except Aaron Altherr has a path to stay kind of the rest of the season if as long as he doesn't just monster tally off. Now he's having...
You gotta pick up one, the Welsh. You got one outfield spot open.
Yep. This is easy for me. It's Aaron Altherr.
It's Altherr.
He's must own right now. He's.
I think so too. Because I mean, Hicks just isn't going to play every day.
Yeah, that's it. You would love. He did this before. Aaron Hicks has done this before. He's done it with the Twins. He did it for a short period of time with the Yankees. But you've got Aaron Judge, you've got Jacoby Ellsbury, and you have Brett Gardner. Plus, don't really have a foreseeable spot at DH because you've got Matt Holliday. You've got, Greg. I mean, I suppose they could make some adjustments to it. I think he'll play enough, but he's not going to play enough to be an everyday player. It'll be a start less than Altherr. And I still like Altherr the rest of the season regardless of it. They're both having just monster seasons, absolutely monster seasons. But I would take Altherr. You agree Altherr is a must-own in 12?
Yes. I think in 10-man I can still see people being wary, but in 10-man, I feel like he's a guy that you also add because you can afford to pick up hot guys and drop them because there's other dudes on the wire, hot guys.
Like Adrian Alima. Jacoby Ellsbury or Altherr?
Ellsbury's been really good.
Yeah, yes.
But homers, he can't stay healthy, so I'm going to take Altherr.
Kevin, your man crush, Kevin Pillar or Altherr?
How did you just give me Kevin Pillar?
You talk about him every week.
I don't talk about Kevin Pillar every week because I put him in the ads.
Someone check the tape. Check the tape.
I put him in the ads? I don't ever talk about Kevin Pillar. What are you talking about?
That's all you do. Bognation of Domination is the Pillar Institute. That's for sure.
I do not think so. I'm not Chris McBrien.
Okay. So Pillar or Altherr?
Altherr.
Oh, I wish you would have taken Pillar. That would have just been a great moment. Okay, so
I never talk about Kevin Pillar.
Always
talk
about him. Are you ready to play Guess Who number 2?
Let's play Guess Who, the second suitor.
The second suitor, okay. Runs, 16 runs. Homers, 10. RBIs, 23. 0 stolen bases with a .313 average. 16 runs, 10 homers, 23 RBIs, hitting .313 with a big old goose egg on the stolen bases. Is this player Yonder Alonso or Marcell Ozuna?
That's got to be Yonder.
Final answer.
Final answer.
Incorrect.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Because Marcell Ozuna is hitting .313. with 10 homers, 23 RBIs.
I thought Marcel had at least a swipe. He doesn't have any swipes, or I guess not any in the last month.
Not in the last month. Yeah, this is over the last 30 days. Continuing with the 30-day marker, he does not have any over the last 30 days or on the season, by the way. He's 11 homers, hitting .325 on the season. Where you were off, Bogman, because these guys are very close, and I'll bet you a lot of people were sitting there with you agreeing on the numbers, is the average. Over the last 30 days, Yonder Alonso is hitting .284, so about 20 points, 30 points lower than Ozuna, but he also has 10 homers, 12 runs, which is lower, and 22 RBI. So minus a...
And
zero stolen bases. So minus the average on the run. So everybody is talking about Yonder Alonso, rightfully so. He's having a career year. It's a banner year with the Oakland A's. But Barry Bonds' favorite, Marcell Ozuna, is having him a damn season.
Well, pick one for the rest of the year, Marcell or Yonder.
I'm going to go Ozuna.
Man, I think I'm going to go with Yonder. I think the change is real.
Yonder, by the way, his average is better over the season than it is over the last 30 days. He's hitting .309 on the season, 27 RBI, 16 runs, hitting .309. But like I said, Ozuna hitting .325 on the season, 29 RBIs, 11 homers. I think Ozuna benefits greatly from a lineup that has Yelich and Stanton, which could hurt him later in the season because there's one thing Stanton does is he gets hurt a lot.
Not stay healthy. Alonso or Althier?
Oh, I would go Alonso unless I was really needing those stolen bases. That's a tough one.
Yeah, that is tough. I think I'm also going Alonso with the power.
Okay. Number three on the Guess Who. Are you ready, Boogman?
Ready.
All right. With five wins, obviously no saves because this is a starting pitcher, but five wins, 24 strikeouts.
I don't know. It could be Chris Davinsky with those five wins.
Yeah, that's right, actually. There's a couple, actually. 2.78 ERA and a 1.04 whip. Dims are the numbers for this New York Yankees pitcher, Luis Severino or Masahiro Tanaka. Over the last 30 days, Bogman, what do you think?
Have five wins? I know Tanaka started rough and got better.
This New York Yankees pitcher with five wins.
Can I get innings pitched?
24 strikeouts, 2.78 ERA, and a 1.04 whip.
I'm asking you for more information. Can I get innings pitched?
This being over the last 30 days, making sure I mark this. Sure, you can. One pitcher has 30. Or do you want the...
I want it for the winner.
Okay.
Whoever stat line this is.
Okay, here's how I'll say it. The winner is 35.2 innings pitched. The other pitcher has 34.2 innings pitched.
That's Tanaka.
You say Tanaka is the player with 24 strikeouts, 5 wins, 2.78 ERA, and a 1.04 whip.
Yes.
You are correct, sir. When you cheated on the damn game. You cheated asking more questions.
How did I cheat?
You cheated.
You didn't have to give me the answer. Or you could have just said, no, I don't have that information. Well, you didn't. You gave it to me. No cheating.
The biggest marker here, really, I don't know how or why that was the thing, the innings pitch that pulled it out. They were within one inning of each other. The big key here is Luis Severino has two wins on the season, and Masahiro Tanaka has five, all coming in the last 30 days.
I need Keuchel to suck some, just a little bit, I got the Peeps versus Garlic bet with Howard, and Dallas Keuchel's winning the Cy Young over here, and Tanaka's doing much better, like we're seeing now, but Keuchel won't stop.
The only thing that's holding, by the way, it's really funny, I'm looking at, this is in our format of a league, which has a couple more stats, Tanaka's 37 ranked, but Severino has a better whip, .84, has just about the same ERA, it's .286, strikeouts are massively different, and I kind of thought gave it away, by the way. Now that I think about it, the 35 innings pitched to the strikeouts is a dead giveaway because Severino's 39 strikeouts over the 34.2 innings pitched. I shouldn't give you the damn innings, you damn cheater.
Well,
don't use your mind trickery on me, you damn cheater. All right, last one for Guess Who. You ready?
Yep.
Guess Who has 54 strikeouts in the last 30 days? And Guess Who has a 2.7 ERA on the season, you have to pair what stat line with what player. These players are Steven Strasburg and Jacob DeGrom. One has 54 strikeouts in 30 days, and one has a 2.7 ERA.
Well, I think Strasburg missed the start because his child was being born. So I'll go with DeGrom with the strikeouts and Strasburg with the ERA.
You are correct. Good job. DeGrom having three straight double-digit strikeout games, and then it kind of fell apart, has a really bad ERA. DeGrom's ERA is in like the 4.5 range. Strasburg having a Strasburg season. He's just not hurt. That's the only difference between the Strasburg season is when he's not hurt. Otherwise, he's doing some Golden Boy stuff. He's just doing good things. That's what happens.
Golden Pony Boy. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that's what he's done.
I love for Strasburg to stay healthy for a whole year. I'm not a Strasburg hater. I love watching him pitch. Mm. But it's one. And the same thing with Stanton. I'd love to see Stanton stay healthy the whole year and hit 50 homers. I just, you know, I'm Missouri, apparently. I'm the show me state. Show me you can stay healthy. That's what I want to see.
All right, there you go. That is Guess Who. Play that the second of the weeks every month. So if you want to participate in Guess Who, you can always throw me some stuff. Is it the Welsh on Twitter or isitthewelsh@gmail.com. You can send me some suggestions. Do it, though, before Wednesdays. We record the episode for Thursday on Wednesday night. So if you would like to send one, rock me Wednesday morning, and I will see if I can put that together for Guess Who, because next week we're going to play the Panic Room. The Panic Room is back. It'll be very exciting.
All right. I hope you enjoyed the Guess Who. Pretty good at that game. Yeah. I think I'm better at that game than the Blind Plays.
Yeah,
for sure.
You're not bad.
But right after this break, we are going to have the Ball Bag, everybody's favorite, our version of the mailbag. We call it the Ball Bag. Stick around. We're going to reach in there and grab out some questions right after this break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
That's right. Fallback at InThisLeague.com. That is where you can email us questions. Reminder, as always, email them as close to the episode that we do. Which we record on Wednesday night. So if you send them Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so we can try to give you applicable answers around then. Or if you just don't care, shoot them out.
Deep appreciation to everybody that is listening to the rules and sending us questions. Because if you don't.
Tons of ball bag responses this week.
Slow clap
Thank
for you guys.
You
got
much.
Yeah,
yes.
Good job. Keep it up. Keep up with the questions. Gets us segment, gets us content, and lets us know that you guys are involved. You can also tweet us with the hashtag ITLBallBag. And we can answer it right then for you, or we can save it for the episode, and we can say your name, and it could be super popular for all the people and the things. what do we got?
Benton says, which Hosmer is more believable, current Hosmer or early season Hosmer, and would you trade Thames for Hosmer?
Would I first, no, I would not trade Thames for Hosmer.
Neither would I.
Would you? Okay. Yep. That's a hard pass.
And I love Hosmer.
You are a big Hosmer guy. You Hosmer and Pilar is all in Bogman's Bog Nation.
What is Pilar? So bizarre to me. I talk about him in the pickups, maybe.
So bizarre.
I've never brought up Kevin Pilar.
Okay, so what do you think? Is the current Hosmer who's hitting .293 with three homers, 14 RBI? Here's the perfect example of how I'm going to answer this. These are like Hosmer numbers. You know what I mean? Like 14 right. RBIs, three homers, 11 runs, two stolen bases, hitting .293 with a .350 on base percentage. These are Hosmer numbers. I think the Hosmer we're seeing, this is the Hosmer. Is he like perturbed by Hosmer, or is he like, hey, he's better because his average is – I didn't get the tone of the –
Well,
email.
Hosmer was so bad the first month of the season. He hit bring it up here. In April – he hit .225, and now he's hitting .471 in May. So,
well, he's not .471, but
he's not .471. But I think what you have right now, like you said, a .293, maybe a little lower, a .275-ish.
Agreed.
.260 to .275 is more believable than .290 to .315 for me with Hosmer. But I think the power is going to come on. I think he's going to be fine. I think everyone was a little bit worried because he had such a bad second half last year, and then he started bad in April. I think he's going to be fine. So, no, I wouldn't trade Thames for Hosmer because Thames has been playing so white hot.
Yeah, his trade value, Thames' trade value is just so much better.
It's much better than Hosmer.
It just by a mile, and you should get so much more for Hosmer or for Thames. So, yeah, I think Hosmer is about what you're seeing now outside of, like, I mean overall season numbers, not the 400 hitter, and I would not trade Thames for him. What else we got?
All right, Hosmer. Cody Trevitz says, given that Contreras has played much less than expected, in a head-to-head categories league, would you look for the rare bench catcher or trade for someone else? Because Contreras is getting like 3 starts a week.
He's still got 96 at bats, but you're right. Hitting is also, he's not doing anything with the at bats. He has 2 homers, 13 RBIs, hitting .219. It's not good. Almost 30% strikeout ratio. Okay, so what was the question? He's saying, would you do the rare pick up a backup or trade for somebody else? I'm going to say this right off the bat. I'm not comfortable with trading for a catcher. Like, I just don't think that ever ends well unless you can get a discount on a good catcher, which
Contreras
you won't do.
Droppable right now? He's hitting .219. On base is .292. He's played in 29 games.
Well, I mean, being a player being droppable, I think, is kind of subjective to who's out there. But to the point, there probably is a better option. I mean, dude, Robinson Chirinos with Texas is hitting .294 with 5 homers and 11 RBIs. But that's only in a short sample size on the season.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best catcher on the Rangers right now. Lucroy sucks.
Just going through this list, the catching situation with the Cubs is kind of wonky. Jeff Band. I mean, so, okay, here's just something I want to point out. When you're talking about Contreras, oh, he's not getting this and that, he has got more at-bats than a majority of these effing guys I'm looking at. He has more at-bats than McCann, than Avila, than Gattis. He's under JT Romito. Here's a couple others. He's got just about the same. I think he's got a couple more at-bats than Yosemite Grandal, Russell Martin, James McCann. James McCann's awful.
I think the answer that I want is trade Contreras to someone who's trying to buy low on him.
What are you going to get?
Maybe you can get a starting pitcher. I mean, to pile them up.
Dan Straley? I don't think so.
You're not going to get Dan Straley. No, maybe you can get someone decent.
I would consider picking
up a backup. You trade Contreras for like Taiwan Walker?
I don't know.
I know it's a crap trade, but if you need a pitcher, you can pick up a hot catcher on the wire. Or just have Chirinos, just whatever. When he gets in there, he's hitting, so why not?
I would rather – I mean, okay, sure. If Walker is actually an upgrade, okay. I would either, A, if I had bench dead weight, I'd rather pick up a backup catcher just for a few weeks to see how it plays out. Okay. Or I would just – if there's a great option, I would drop Contreras for somebody else. I don't know if Walker does anything for you.
I would float him. I mean, there's a Cubs fan in every league, right?
That's a good point. I mean, would you pick up – how about this? Russell Martin's out on the wire, who hit the DL. He's hitting under .200. Would you drop Contreras for Russell Martin?
I think that's trading a problem for a problem. So
Agreed. I would rather take
whoever's a hot catcher, you know.
Hot guy.
I like the hot guys, the Welsh.
You do like
I want
the hot
Julian
guys.
Edelman on my team. That's what I want. What about David Selby? Says grade the trade. He said he finally got Odor in a trade. It's Odor, Brandon Drury, and Danny Salazar, and he moved Cesar Hernandez and Avisel Garcia. I mean, David, you wrote in to brag about that trade.
Oh, yeah, you're just a bragger.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Congratulations on the sex, buddy. That's great that you have Drury and Salazar for – I mean, I guess I see, like, it cost you Hernandez to get Salazar. No, that's ridiculous. I forgot. You got – wait a minute. He got Odor, Drury, and Salazar.
And Salazar for Hernandez and Garcia.
You're a criminal. That's dirty. That's
dirty,
he
wrote
David.
In a brag. That's what I said.
Good brag.
He says, also wondering if I should keep the Aaron Hicks pickup I made over Brett Gardner, Jason Wirth, Althier,
nope.
Reddick, Broxton, or Gamble.
Althier. Broxton hot, too. Would you rather have Broxton or Hicks?
I'd rather have Althier.
Well, that's not in question. Althier is – I drop Hicks immediately for Althier, but would you rather have
– Broxton's been hot. To me, these are the same dudes. So I don't really care which one you have.
I would take Althier, and then I'd be curious who else you have and see if I can get Broxton.
Yeah, I mean, Gardner's been good too. Captain Joe Juniman says, got offered Francisco Lindor and Cody Bellinger for Manny Machado. Do I take it? I said yes immediately.
Got offered Lindor and Bellinger for Machado. Is this a God, I don't know if it matters in any format.
Doesn't.
I think I'd take it too.
Yeah,
is that weird?
I love Machado. No, it's not weird. But do you know how good Francisco Lindor is this year?
I'm well
it's
aware.
Incredible. He's
well
already
aware.
Got 8 bombs.
I'm kidding. And like Bellinger is locked in now. You know, I mean,
yeah,
we're not having this conversation.
Now that Toles blew out his knee.
I thought it was beforehand. I don't think Toles was the backbreaker to keeping him up this whole time.
Oh,
but it's just another thing.
Before we knew about Toles. So.
Yeah, it's just another thing that solidifies him being up. So to get Bellinger, who qualifies at first and outfield but in some formats, and Lindor for Machado, who – what is Machado? Let's get the actual numbers here just to have a Manny Machado. Manny Machado. What a wonderful name. 8 homers, 21 RBIs, hitting .226, 2 stolen. He actually has 2 stolen bases this year. Yeah,
2
man.
More than last year.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do that too. And I don't like trading those big core guys, but Lindor has the same amount of bombs. He has 1 less stolen base, by the way, but average is way better. Yeah. You got to do it. If it's keeper or if you're doing that in keeper, right? Easy?
Yeah, either way, I think I'm doing it.
I'm with you. That's
I mean,
great
it depends
trading.
On how many people I can keep and all that stuff. But
yeah, good
you know,
humble
I mean,
brag, Juneman.
Machado's got he's hit .224 last month, .231 this month, 4 homers per month. It's not he hasn't made any gigantic incremental changes. So yeah, I think I'm making that trade pretty easily.
I like it. That's a great trade.
John Durgan says 12-team mix. My pitching went from very deep to complete crap in a 2-week span. Thor to the DL, Harvey to the principal's office, Tyon surgery, Garrett demoted. He leaves him with you and Mike effing Leaf as my 2 top pitchers. He says, I trade Matt Kemp to get Chris Archer. No brainer, ?
Easy.
Kemp is my number 2 outfielder behind Cruz. It's ESPN where we roster minimum 5 outfielders. Thanks, John Durgan. NWO is just too sweet.
Yes. So For life, Durgan, official member. Durgan, official member of the new Welsh order, the real heels. I don't love that Kemp is a second outfielder, but I do wonder, per David's humble brag, when he talks about guys like Gardner, Althier, Broxton being on the wire, I wonder if any of those guys are sitting out there. And I don't know. I think a Broxton or an Althier would be a damn good replacement for a Kemp.
Yeah. Get somebody up off the wire. Trade for Chris Archer immediately.
You would do that trade regardless if you had pitching issues, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
me too.
I would.
Me too.
Absolutely. I think that is a no-brainer trade. That is someone who is desperate for outfielders. I mean, they got to be desperate. They got to be James Bolden level desperate.
Yeah. Viva the Durgan.
Stephen Pott says, I have several questions. he has several questions. His starting pitchers are not great. Is it safe to drop Shoemaker and Gausman? Who else would you drop in a 10-teamer?
But for what?
Yeah.
Like, that's the most
here's
important
starting
thing.
Pitchers. I'll give you this list. It's Paxton, Lynn, Cahill, Robbie Ray, Cotton, Senzatella, Walker, Chase Anderson, Matt Shoemaker, Gausman, and Hill.
But that doesn't that doesn't help me. That's
it's
who he
ugly.
Has. I need to know who are you dropping these guys for. That's
Alex
the most
Wood,
important.
Alex Wood, Patrick Corbin, Matt Andrees. Who would you add?
I'd add Well, I mean, we're effing homers,
Wood.
But I'd add Corbin.
I'd add Wood, and I'd add Andrees, and then I'd add Corbin.
Corbin's last for you? I had Corbin.
He just got beat up.
Yeah, Wood, I like.
He was in Colorado, but got beat up.
Alex Wood for sure. I
think I'm holding Gausman.
I am too, by the way.
The Orioles are playing. He had a good start in his last start, and the Orioles are playing the Royals, who have scored the least amount of runs in the big.
Better answer for you. Stream. If it's because it was only between Gausman and Shoemaker, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stream. I mean, he's got Cahill, but I feel like on this bunch, you got to keep Cahill.
Yeah. I'd just take Shoemaker and I'd look and I'd see who has a better matchup, Alex Wood or Patrick Corbin, and go that route. I don't think any of those guys are massive holds because Cahill you could drop tomorrow if he gets blown up. So I would just go with the hot hand best matchup. You know, if this is just off the top of my head. I'm not looking at a schedule. But if, you know, Alex Wood were going against the Padres and Patrick Corbin was going against the Tigers, I would go for Alex Wood.
He's got one more. It says, if I was trying to acquire Quintana of the players provided, who would be good to get me Quintana? He also he put his extra hitters on here. Owings, Brantley, Alonso, Peraza.
I trade Peraza.
Trade Peraza. Would you trade Alonso for Quintana with this crap staff that he has? I think I might do
that. I might do that. I don't like doing it.
The
but
only
yeah,
guy
you're right.
I would trade is Brantley.
I'm definitely not trading Brantley.
It's the only guy.
I trade Owings too. Yeah, you're right. I would trade Owings for Quintana. I like Quintana. I mean, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. I think he's still a prime. Like, I want to own him. Like, I tried. I've tried to pick him up. So I would own him. So, yeah, anybody in that list but Brantley.
And Potts says, thanks. You guys are easily the most entertaining pod yet. You still maintain focus on baseball. Keep it up. Love the new Welsh order.
Yes. New Welsh order in the house, Bogman.
In the heezy.
In the heezy. We always talk about, talk about baseball, except for the first 10 minutes of the episode. I got a couple Twitter ones real quick for you.
Yeah, let's hear them.
At SRL Judd. I don't know what that's supposed to stand for, but it stands for something. He asks, do I offer Garrett Cole or Johnny Cueto for Jake Arrieta?
No.
Neither. You're not buying Jake Arrieta. Very popular question. We had to cut some because lots of Jake Arrieta questions coming in. This becomes more about, are you looking to acquire? And you say no, because I'm not trading Johnny Cueto for sure, but I might trade Cole. I think I would trade Cole.
I don't know if I'd trade Cole either.
I like the buy low.
Been pretty solid. I like the buy low too, but...
You think he's done? You think Arrieta's done?
No, I don't think he's done. I just don't know if he's as good as Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole has a 105 whip. He's got 6 quality starts. I know he's 1-3. That sucks, but he's got 9 walks to 42 strikeouts. I think I'm holding Garrett Cole.
I'm trading Cole for sure. I think it's a good buy.
I'm holding Cole. I'm holding Cole and Cueto. I'm doing neither for those Cueto's guys. I trade like Porcello.
By the way, Cueto's having a similar Porcello. Cueto's having a similar kind of season as Arrieta, but just no one talks about it because Arrieta's a Cub. I don't know.
You trade Zach Greinke for Jake Arrieta?
Yep. Absolutely. Wouldn't?
No.
You're crazy. Okay. Why would you not trade Zach Greinke?
Jake Arrieta blows. He has not been good. His ERA is 5.35. His whip is 1.47. He hasn't been good, dude. Yeah. I mean, I know he had his last start in Colorado, and that sucks.
Does that mean he's not going to be better?
I think he's going to get better, but he's got some blow-ups.
But if you think he's going to get better for Jake Arrieta means he's going to return to Jake Arrieta. If he's going to falter all year, then I see where you're going. I don't buy that.
Maybe I would do Greinke, but no, I think the Greinke line is lying. I'm definitely not trading Cole for him. Cole has just been better all the way through.
Pre-All-Star break career is a 3.96 ERA. Post-All-Star break, 3.19.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying Cueto and Cole are good. Okay. I can understand Greinke because Greinke plays in a bad spot, but he's been good. So I can get that one. But Cole and Cueto are closer to frontline, especially with all the injuries. To being equal value with Arrieta. So I don't think I'm dealing either one of those dudes for Arrieta.
Pre-All-Star break whip is 1.24. That's not good. Post-All-Star
break? What do you want to bet, Cole versus Arrieta from this
1.07.
point? We'll take it from May 11th. Cole versus Arrieta for the rest of the season. How much?
Well, what's the bet? You mean standard 5x5?
Sure, standard 5x5, which is really 4x4 because neither one of them gets saved.
Yeah.
Let's go 5x5 with quality starts.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
How much?
I don't know.
Or what?
I don't know. Let's let the fans decide. Should it be money or should it be a thing? Well, they're going to vote a thing. They want one of us to suffer.
I love that. You don't like those bets. Let's just do $20.
All right, $20. $20 unless someone comes up with a groundbreaking idea. Or we could have like a bunch of people participate in it, and maybe they could, they could sweeten the pot somehow. Two more at Tog Nation got offered Bellinger for my Ryan Zimmerman. It's a points league. Hashtag ITL ballbag. Hashtag new Welsh order. Damn right. Tog was a heavy push of wanting some more of the new Welsh order. I hope people. Do you think people understood the reality of like the bits I did last week? Like. Put some crowd noise in, made it sound like a play at the beginning, did an old school NWO commercial in the middle of the show.
I'm taking Bellinger.
Oh, you don't care. You don't give a shit. That's why Bog Nation of Domination is a bunch of losers. I'm taking Bellinger too here. I'll trade Zimmerman.
I'm taking Bellinger not because I don't like Ryan Zimmerman or I don't trust him. I think Ryan Zimmerman has been a very good player for a very long time. Dude just never stays healthy. So I'll go with the hot new toy over the old man.
Yeah, yeah, we like hot new toys.
Except for the ones the Mets have.
Yep. No, last one. At JBron8447, drop Hernan Perez or Yosmani Tomas to add Jason Kipnis. He says Perez is his starting second baseman. By the way, it's a head-to-head points.
This one's tough because Kipnis has just been so bad.
Yeah.
It's been called up.
I still want to buy Kipnis. I'm a buyer on Kipnis, and I would drop Hernan.
Yeah, I'm definitely not dropping Tomas, even though he's been struggling recently. He hit a homer tonight as we're recording this.
Boom.
Did he say it's 10 teams or did he say
12? Well, he didn't. I'm sorry. He just said head-to-head points. He didn't say how many. I just assume it's 12. You're going to drop Hernan for Jason Kipnis.
Yeah, I would. I would. Just for the, you know. Even though he's only hitting 155, you don't have to deal with it that much in points league. So
yeah, you're doing it. You're doing it. You're
totally I would do it.
All right. There you go. That is the ball bag. It was big. Now it is empty. So make sure to fill it with your questions. Email ballbag@inthisleague.com. You know the deal. If you do it too early, we're going to have to wait a little bit. But you guys are doing a great job, so keep it up. Emailing in your questions, or you can use the hashtag ITLBallBag. I got to tell you. I'm loving the new Welsh Order hashtag. I'm loving the support for it. I'm going to have to get the shirt together. I am going to have to put the damn new Welsh Order shirt together. It's happening. All right, there you go. That is the episode, Bogman and the Welsh for In This League. All 2 hours, if you missed any of it, just go back and on-demand it right here, fantasysportsnetwork.com/radio, or go to inthisleague.com, and you can find the podcast versions. We do 2 baseball shows a week. We've got the Prospect Podcast, which I'm putting out some episodes in the next couple weeks with some guests. We've got football. We've got basketball. It is all going on at InThisLeague.com. So if you are a hardcore fantasy sports nut, InThisLeague.com and potentially the ITL Army are for you. We'll be back with you next week. For Bogman, for the Welsh, bye-bye.
See ya.